Welcome to the Raised with Jesus podcast, 10 minutes every day where the life of Jesus meets yours. You've got your daily Bible reading for June 4th, 2019, looking at the second portion of 1 Corinthians. And as we get started today, I'm just going to read a little bit from a book called The Spirituality of the Cross by Jean Vieth. And this portion really touches on what yesterday's podcast talked about. And I'm not sure that I had it, spoken about very coherently yesterday, so I want to make sure I cleared that up a little bit. When we talk about the theology of the cross and the fact that God hides his greatest power under weakness, and he hides his greatest glory in weakness, and we as humans are always looking for something glorious, successful, and grand, some sort of grand achievement, but the way God works is usually against that. So this is from page 76 in the revised edition of The Spirituality of the Cross. And this is what Pastor Vieth writes. One of the best books on the theology of the cross is by Richard Eyre, who for years served as a hospital chaplain, ministering to the sick and dying. In Pastoral Care Under the Cross, Pastor Eyre tells of a patient who required kidney dialysis and was in intensive care following open-heart surgery. Whenever Pastor Eyre would pray with him, asking that God's will be done, Mr. Whitty, the man's name, followed a common Lutheran custom, and he would make the sign of the cross. When his daughter visited him, however, she would be all smiles, bubbling over with reassurances, telling her father not to worry, that God would heal him. But somehow, her father didn't seem comforted by this, Pastor Eyre recalls, and turns to me to make the sign of the cross. The daughter believed that having enough faith would lead to healing. There is no place for weakness and suffering in her understanding of the will of God. But while she was busy trying to get God to surrender to her will, her father had surrendered to the will of God. He knows that it is the cross that lies at the heart of one's confidence in the Lord. As much as parishioners may want to see the hand of God in nature's beautiful sunrises, moving stories of conversion, or success in parish programs, observes Pastor Eyre, it is in the cross of Christ, and in bearing their own crosses, that God chooses to reveal his heart to them. With the theology of glory, we will begin to demand that God justify himself to us in our sufferings by giving us healing and success. We will demand a God who does what we want him to do, and we will reject the way of the cross by which he comes to us. We will become fearful of suffering and preoccupied with his avoidance at the expense of truth and faithfulness. In the hospital, patients are helpless. They are dependent on the medical staff, on medication, on machines. Many sick people hate the thought of being dependent on life support equipment, preferring even death to being hooked up to some machine, quote unquote. Our culture also draws away from people who are utterly dependent. Those who believe in physician-assisted suicide hold that it is better to die than to suffer or to be dependent. Those who believe in euthanasia maintain that a life of dependence, weakness, and suffering is not worth living, that at some point it is a kindness for those who are sick to be killed. Being utterly helpless and dependent, however, is precisely our spiritual condition. We are utterly helpless to save ourselves. We are utterly dependent on God. Saving faith involves giving up on our pretensions of being self-sufficient, strong, and in control. Instead, we are to rest in utter dependence on Jesus Christ. My grace is sufficient for you, the Lord told Paul, for my power is made perfect in weakness. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. It is natural for us to want to save ourselves, to cultivate a spiritual independence and self-sufficiency, so that we can be in control of our spiritual lives. No wonder we have such a fondness for religions of law, theologies of glory, which allow us to center and focus on our own achievements, our own merits, and our own accomplishments. That we keep failing to achieve, merit, and accomplish what we think we should, however we evade our failures by rationalization or dishonesty, by no means alters the goal of spiritual self-sufficiency. In a truly evangelical spirituality, however, this attitude must be broken, so that we can be awake to our need and put our trust in Christ rather than in ourselves. In the gospel, our sense of independence is replaced by a sense of dependence. It is also natural for us to desire independence, self-sufficiency and control in our earthly lives, to prefer death to dependence, to judge our own worth and those of others in terms of the capacity to do, as it were, good works. Such attitudes may have their value, as will be seen in the secular sphere, but still, even in secular terms, the members of a family are supposed to be dependent on each other, as are the members of a society or an economic system. The attitude of complete self-sufficiency cannot only undermine faith, it can also wreck God's design for human relationships. Just as such complacency is shattered by the law in everyday life, such complacency is shattered by bearing the cross. That is, failure, frustration, disappointment, difficulty, struggle, and suffering. Both the law and the cross drive us to an ever deeper and ever more intimate dependence on Jesus Christ, who meets our sin and our suffering in his cross. And with that concept in the background, that God more often chooses to accomplish his greatest work in the guise of suffering rather than success, and in that guise and that cross of suffering that we don't seek for ourselves, it just kind of happens, we are taught more and more to depend on the words that Christ has spoken, the word of the Bible, rather than our own judgments and measurements and ideas and actions. And with that kind of in the background, consider 1 Corinthians chapter 1, where Paul had just spoken about, you know, that there should be no divisions within the church. And it makes sense that the Corinthians were probably caught up in a comparison of personalities and ideas, and, oh, I follow Paul, I follow Peter, Paul, Apollos, I follow Jesus. This comparison with one another, and focused on self rather than on Christ. And Paul had concluded in verse 17, "For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with the wisdom used in speeches, so that the cross of Christ would not be emptied of its power. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. In fact, it is written, 'I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will bring to nothing.' Where is the wise man? Where is the expert in the Jewish law? Where is the probing thinker of the present age? Has God not shown that the wisdom of this world is foolish? Indeed, since the world through its wisdom did not know God, God in his wisdom decided to save those who believe through the foolishness of the preached message. Yes, Jews ask for signs, Greeks desire wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, which is offensive to Jews and foolishness to Greeks. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. We preach Christ crucified because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For example, consider your call, brothers. Not many of you were wise from a human point of view, not many were powerful, and not many were born with high status. But God chose the foolish things of the world to put to shame those who are wise. God chose the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are strong, and God chose the lowly things of the world and the despised things and the things that are not to do away with the things that are, so that no one may boast before God. But because of him, you are in Christ Jesus, who became for us the wisdom from God, namely, our righteousness and sanctification and redemption. God did this, so just as it is written, 'Let the one who boasts boast in the Lord.'" And that's really the point. It's kind of a question, what do we take pride in? Or put it another way, who gets the glory? Who gets the glory? We can really disguise that a little bit more. Well, you know, we're all doing this to the glory of God, and we're trying our best to, you know, grow the church. There's that whole segment of literature available called Church Growth, and they propose all these different principles and ideas that if you just follow this particular formula, then you'll have a successful church, at least outwardly successful. But that's the theology of glory. Because who gets the glory then? Well, we might say this is all to the glory of God, but realistically, how is that growth accomplished, and what does it really look like? Paul will address that in more depth in the next chapter or so of 1 Corinthians. And perhaps a better question, rather than who gets the glory, because we can hide that one pretty easily, is what do we take pride in? Do we take pride in the fact that we, you know, we hit triple digits on Easter in our attendance? Do we take pride in how flashy and how beautiful our website is, or our church? Do we take pride in the friendliness of the people? Do we take pride in hitting a budget every year and chipping away at a mortgage or a debt? Do we take pride in our children in such a way that it's like our own identity is tied up in who they are, and their success is only indicative of how good of a parent I was? What do we take pride in? Who gets the glory? Paul says, and he redirects our attention, Christ was crucified for you. God used the weakness of crucifixion to bring you to himself. And so God gets the glory. And if you want to boast, if you want to take pride in something, then take pride in the fact that God has even used me, you. God has used us to carry his gospel. Take pride in the fact that God cared so much about us, not because of our own loveliness or lack thereof, but God cared so much about us that he gave his son to be crucified for you. You can find us Wednesday night, 7 p.m., Sunday morning, 9 a.m. at 2250 South Hollins Vineyard Road in Maumee. God bless your day.